1240 and 95.3 FM, WJON. Joining me now, Star Tribune sports columnist Jim Suhan. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Lee.
Jim's appearance being brought to you by the Green Mill of downtown St. Cloud. Jim, before we get into talking about the Twins, sad news this morning as we learn that Ryan Sandberg, Hall of Fame second baseman for the Chicago Cubs, has passed. Do you know much about Ryan? Yeah. Did you cover him a lot?
Not really. He was in his heyday when I was more of a fan before I started covering professional sports. What I really remember was that, you know, how provincial sports used to be and how inaccessible sports used to be. And then all of a sudden, WGN is providing daily broadcasts of the Cubs and Harry Caray and Ryan Sandberg and Andre Dawson. And it was like the best thing there was on TV. You know, we went from having one game of the week on Saturday, and people are younger than us are not going to remember any of this.
I remember.
We had like one game of the week on Saturday. And other than that, you watched your local team. You didn't get to watch all your local team's games, but you got to watch your local team occasionally. You got to watch one national game of the week. And then all of a sudden, the Cubs are on TV every day. And not only are they on TV every day, but they have Ryan Sandberg, maybe the best player in the game, dominating and providing incredible entertainment with Harry Caray, you know, carrying the show off every day. And then that segued into WGN realizing they had a hit and carrying Bulls games. And all of a sudden you could watch Michael Jordan 82 times a year, even when he wasn't on national broadcast. It really changed the entire sporting landscape. And one of the reasons the team was so successful, or that the broadcast was so successful, is that Ryan Sandberg helped make the Cubs relevant and interesting on a daily basis. He was an incredible five-tool second baseman, great hitter, great player. I guess, you know, I guess my career covering sports and baseball overlapped with him a bit because he was still playing, you know, I think early 90s. But, you know, he wasn't quite – he didn't really have a big run after that. He was a great player, a very kind of very quiet guy, not a ton, didn't display a lot of personality, but it didn't really matter. I mean, he's just a great charismatic player.
Yeah, I mean, as a kid growing up and you had, what, three television channels, all of a sudden, wow, I can watch baseball every day? Like that,
yeah.
Like you said, it was transformative in that, you know, and this was before the big NFL machine, right? And, you know, yes. Baseball was the American's pastime at that point.
NFL was incredibly popular, but they hadn't figured out how to become a 12-month phenomenon. And I remember talking to people in the NFL about it, even NFL higher-ups back then that I knew. It's like, you guys are crazy. You shut down for like 3 months every summer. You give the stage to baseball. Your sport's more popular than baseball, and you just let them, you know, let other sports just have their time. And you know, in a very fair sense of fairness, that's probably the way to go. It's probably best to have you have your season and they have their season, but it's not a great way to maximize your business. Summers were about baseball, and the Cubs became the most popular, most interesting team in baseball, even more so than the Coastal teams, which was kind of cool. You could watch, you know, then ESPN started doing Sunday Night Baseball, and it was always Red Sox and Yankees. Well, there was a time when you watched the Cubs, you know, 100% more time, you know, 100 more times a year than you could watch the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers. It really changed everything. And it also, you know, it was also the perfect marriage of an innovative thought, a great broadcaster, and a very good, interesting team. And you know, now, of course, now the NFL, you can get NFL news 365 days a year, even when there's no news. But back then, the NFL really went dormant in the middle of the summer.
Am I remembering this correctly? Was Greg Maddux on that team too?
Greg Maddux was on later Cubs teams.
Later,
I believe.
Okay.
You know, I'd have to look that up to be sure. They might have overlapped a little bit, but I think Maddux came later.
Okay. Fair enough. The Twins get a dramatic walk-off win with a single by Brooks Lee last night to get the 5-4 win over Boston. Your thoughts on that game?
The big news of the day is they did start selling off. At a time when they desperately need starting pitching, they traded Chris Paddock and Randy Dobnak to you know, to the Tigers for a 19-year-old A-ball catcher. He's 19. He's in rookie ball. It's hard to project where he's going to end up. He obviously has talent, or they wouldn't have asked for him. But it's a very symbolic move. Not that Chris Paddock is a great pitcher. He's not. I think he had a 4.88 ERA in his time with the Twins. But they need starting pitching, and they traded away a starting pitcher. Also, Randy Dobnik was just kind of the end of a really weird story. You know, Dobnik was very useful to them very early in this regime's tenure, and they rewarded him with a long-term, relatively low-salary contract, just almost as a symbol, hey, this guy will do anything for us. We want to reward people like this. It was kind of a culture signing. And even at a very low salary, Dobnik has been kind of a disaster. He just hasn't pitched well since he got that deal. He's been a minor league fill-in guy more than anything else. They're saving money. They're getting a prospect back. They're basically waving the white flag.
And for Detroit, it was just out of necessity, right? Because Reese Olson's lost for the season.
Yeah, they just need somebody to fill in the bottom of the rotation, and Paddock can do that. And maybe Paddock pitching in a pennant race for a better team, maybe he can survive, he can thrive. If nothing else, as the Twins are proving right now, sometimes you just need guys who can make starts for you. I mean, it's that simple.
So the Vikings continue training camp, and year three under Brian Flores' defense. And, you know, we saw it last year, and I noticed it the year before as well. Obviously, Flores is known for dialing up the pressure, right? But when it comes to veteran quarterbacks, his defense can get exposed a little, can't it?
There's a definite difference between him being able to take advantage of rookies' lack of savvy or awareness or experience and him having to go up against it. Now, I would say every defense is kind of like that. You know, very few defenses can say, hey, we'll take on the best quarterback and we'll shut him down. We've seen some Ravens defenses over the years. Belichick's defenses over the years could do that. Not many can do that. But yeah, if there's a criticism to be made of Flores, is that he's so aggressive that veteran quarterbacks can take advantage of that aggression. And they're going to face a really good run of quarterbacks this year, obviously. Even outside the division, you're going to be seeing Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert and Aaron Rodgers, if he still has it. I don't think he does, but he does know how to exploit a defense. So that is probably the next step for him, is can he adapt to harassing really good, savvy quarterbacks? Maybe the answer is don't go nuts with the answer is, and maybe Dallas Turner can help this, rushing more unpredictably, but not necessarily sending as many people.
Well, and to that point, do you think that was out of necessity because we didn't have those big interior linemen? They went out and got two guys in free agency here to try and bolster that defensive line. Do you think that may help in not having to bring so many people every play?
It might. A number of things going on there. We just talked about this on our Viking Update podcast at TalkNorth.com. Everybody loves edge rushers. Everybody should love edge rushers. They make the most spectacular plays. They can make game-changing plays, strip sacks, hitting the quarterback's arm when he's throwing sacks, all those things. But nothing messes up an offense more than interior pressure. That's why John Randall was one of the greatest players of all time. If you can create interior pressure, if you can push that pocket back, if you can collapse the offensive line from within, if you can split a double team, there's just no antidote for that, other than keeping your back in full time to help protect that. And if your back is worried about that, then the edge rusher is going to have more room. So that could be a big factor, having an interior pass rush. Stopping the run on early downs, putting teams in obvious passing situations, that can be a factor. And then Dallas Turner, if he can be a guy who can be a third, he can be a substitute edge rusher. He can also, in passing situations, come in and rush from an interior position. That could be a factor. Now, we got to see it all come together. But yeah, you did hit on one of the areas of intrigue for this team. What can this defense do against better quarterbacks?
Taking a look at the safety position, does Harrison Smith have anything left?
Well, if he didn't, they wouldn't be paying him. or if they didn't think he did, they wouldn't be paying him. It's not a sentimental league. They have him back because they think he's their best safety still. And also they think he can, play the position, think he can organize the defense. They also think he can help Theo Jackson adapt to being a starter. He's not the player he was in his prime, of course. He's not as dynamic. So he's got to, he's really got to play the mind game well. He's got to use all of his savvy to make up for what he's lost physically. But it's not like, once again, this is not a symbolic, farewell signing. They signed him because they think he can play.
And they signed Theo Jackson to an extension, gave him a raise. So is it believed that he's going to be the starting safety opposite Harrison Smith?
Yes, that's exactly what that contract meant. And I mean, they really need him to take that job and run with it too. I mean, you could always play Metellus there, but then you're taking away a guy you really like to use as a wild card.
All right, Jim, we'll talk about the Lynx tomorrow as they get ready to take on the Liberty. And you mentioned the rivalry there, so we'll talk about that and more tomorrow. What do you have on your podcast that we can check out?
We have the Viking Update show out today, talking in depth about the defense, where they've improved, where they may not, where they have real challenges. Previous show, we talked a lot about the offense. We just talked about the fact that the Josh Metellus signing is pretty fascinating, and that we all thought, the people I know, and people at my network were like, oh man, this is going to be a tough one. How do you value Josh Metellus? How do you pay him something to keep him happy? He's a really important personality. He's a really important player in that system. And, you just wondered if that was a guy they're going to invest a lot of money in, and they get the deal done quickly and without any rancor. And it just reminds you, that's kind of how the Vikings have operated. They just don't lose players that they want. They take care of players they value.
All right. Sounds good. Jim, appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Lee.
All right. Jim Suhan, Star Tribune sports columnist, brought to you by Greenmill of downtown St. Cloud. Up next, we've got an ABC News update brought to you by Executive Express.